Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. The free world lost one of its great heroes. Today, Margaret Thatcher is no longer with us. The Iron Lady, who led the United Kingdom during a critically important moment in time for not only her country but for the world, has moved on to her great reward. And to both commiserate and commemorate her life and her service, I couldn't be more pleased than to have an old friend and colleague, the Honorable John Bolton, join us, a former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, a man who served his country in numerous capacities elsewhere with great distinction, and who worked with Margaret Thatcher, I know, during the Reagan days, and I'm sure interacted with her frequently thereafter. And John, I guess we must start with a thought about what Margaret Thatcher meant to our country as well as the rest of the free world.
Well, she was a great defender of freedom, a great leader for her country, of course, in my view, almost single-handedly pulling it out of the slough of socialism, displaying great will and determination not to accept what everybody was telling her, that you can't roll back history and that this is the future is the Labour Party and its socialist view of Britain. And she just completely reversed that to the point where the next Labour Prime Minister to succeed her, Tony Blair, was much more of a centrist and stood very firmly with the United States against Saddam Hussein. Together with Reagan, of course, during the time they shared office together, they were staunch anti-communists, and I think she was a major factor in supporting Reagan as we defeated communism. And even as she was going out of office, knifed by her own party that didn't appreciate what they were losing, after Saddam Hussein had invaded Kuwait in 1990, she famously, in a meeting with President George H.W. Bush, said, "Now, George, this is not the time to go all wobbly." Indeed. And indeed, that kind of summed up her approach to leadership and the defense of freedom around the world. You know, when people say the United States has reached a tipping point under the Obama administration, that our country's never going to be the same again, all you have to do is think of Margaret Thatcher and how she transformed Great Britain. As long as we have leaders like her, like Ronald Reagan, who believe in freedom, the day is far from over.
Yeah. One of the things that, of course, she really sort of epitomized in her time in government and obviously collaborated very forcefully and with President Reagan was bringing down the Soviet Union, and doing so through a concerted strategy for that purpose, backed most especially, but not exclusively, by the philosophy President Reagan, whom you served with great distinction, John, called peace through strength. And I just wonder, at a moment when we're looking at more and more evidence that the world is a dangerous place, what do you think Margaret Thatcher might have made of the policies that we're now pursuing in this country, most especially, of denuclearization, for example?
Yeah, I think she would have been appalled by what the current administration in Washington is doing. You know, she said on any number of occasions that the Anglo-American alliance was the greatest alliance the free world had ever known, and the importance of standing together against the challenges that we faced was so important. Now we've got an administration that thinks that it's American strength that's provocative, that we're the cause of much of the turmoil in the world, and that the world would be a better place if America were less in it, if we were less dominant in their view, which is 180 degrees the opposite of the Reagan Thatcher view, the peace through strength philosophy, as you say. It's not American strength that's provocative. It's American weakness that's provocative. When we can see it in front of us today, Russia and China and their respective spheres growing more assertive, Iran and North Korea continuing very vigorously with their nuclear weapons and ballistic missile programs, our own allies in places like Japan and South Korea doubting the American nuclear umbrella, as the president talks about denuclearization, as you mentioned. All of this shows the dangers that we face if we continue to pursue the very misguided policy the Obama administration has launched us on.
Yeah. You know, I was struck, John, that recently one of Margaret Thatcher's successors, the incumbent, of course, in Downing Street, David Cameron, made a speech that seemed very explicitly, really, athwart this whole idea of President Obama that the world is moving very satisfactorily in the direction of denuclearization. We're leading by example in this case. Cameron was very clear that we need a nuclear deterrent, he was saying, in the United Kingdom now more than ever, and that rogue states like North Korea need to be deterred by the confidence that we will be able to deal with any threat that they might pose.
Well, you make a very good point. And, you know, coming from David Cameron, it's especially a good thing to hear. You know, he faces enormous budget pressures in the United Kingdom. He has tried to cut welfare expenditures. And, of course, the left and his own coalition partners, the Liberal Democrats, have been pounding on him to cut military expenditures. And they have had some cuts. And the Labour Party in particular thought that basically eliminating Britain's nuclear deterrent would be a huge one-time savings that, of course, they would spend on their welfare program. So to have Cameron resist is a real mark of standing up to these domestic pressures. But I think you've put your finger on it. Saying we need a nuclear deterrent in a dangerous and troubled world is exactly the opposite of Obama saying if we denuclearize, if the United States unilaterally reduces its nuclear capabilities, it will be an example to others, to Russia, to China, to Iran and North Korea to do the same, is so unrealistic and so dangerous for the United States that, thank God, at least in Britain, we have a national leader who's prepared to make the case that it's our nuclear capabilities that deter these potential aggressors, that provide a framework for stability. This is the example of peace through strength.
John Bolton, of course, is our guest. He is the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. He served in the State Department, the Justice Department, and in numerous other capacities. He is currently a fellow with the American Enterprise Institute. You see him all the time, I'm very pleased to say, at Fox News, and we're very grateful to him to have him from time to time with us as well. John, on this point, the Wall Street Journal editorializes today very powerfully that we face what they call the coming nuclear breakout. You touched on North Korea a little bit. I'd like to get just very quickly your sense of where that whole caper stands. How serious a threat does it represent to us? How appropriately has the Obama administration been dealing with it, having, as we've been discussing, perhaps invited it by their weakness? And then, if you would, as well, in the remaining minute or two we have, tell us a little bit what you make of the fact that the negotiations with North Korea's partner in crime, Iran, have gone apparently bust again.
Yeah, well, I think the North Koreans look at the Obama administration. They see weakness. They are trying to achieve their longstanding objective of being accepted as a nuclear weapon state, to remove sanctions, to have a peace treaty with the United States. They want to try and prove that they broke through, they got nuclear weapons, and now the rest of the world has to take it as an accomplished fact, something that can't be changed. And I think they see the weakness of the Obama administration, their own success in putting a payload into Earth orbit in December, testing their third nuclear device a couple of months ago, as exactly the opportune moment to press. And what's the response of the Obama administration after initial steps, probably pre-programmed at the Pentagon, to show our deterrent capabilities? You have the administration saying, well, we're going to dial back our response here, and the Secretary of Defense canceling a missile test long scheduled, utterly unrelated to North Korea.
What we have is
the and much needed. We have the United States conforming to the behavior North Korea wants from us, as opposed to North Korea conforming to the behavior we want from them. We're doing it exactly backwards. And I tell you, the Iranians see this. They see the North Korean effort as something they would very much like to parallel. So a lot rides on this. It's bad enough with the dangerous regime in North Korea, but in Iran and other would-be nuclear weapon states are watching it very carefully as well.
They are indeed. John Bolton, we have to let it go with that. Thank you very much for joining us, for the superb work you do at Fox and the American Enterprise Institute. Keep it up. Come back to us again very soon. Next up, Michael Smith on what Iran is up to as part of the global jihad. What that means for you. Straight ahead.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there.
So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home,
or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff, like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Michael Smith. He is a guy we turn to with some regularity for analysis of matters that involve intelligence and counterterrorism. He is currently the co-founder of Cronus Advisory, a strategic advisory firm that is in the business of assisting U.S. government defense officials and policymakers on irregular warfare-related concerns. He is also a counterterrorism advisor to members of the United States Congress. And Michael, it's always good to have you with us.
Thank you, Frank. It's an honor to be with you and your listeners.
Let's start with something that I imagine is very much on the mind of some of your friends on Capitol Hill, at least if a report by Catherine Herridge, Fox News, is to be credited, and I find that generally that is the case. Catherine writes that four senior members of the House of Representatives, specifically the chairman of the Intelligence, Armed Services, Judiciary, and Foreign Affairs Committee, have written President Obama that they have, quote, grave misgivings, unquote, about his administration's decision to send Osama bin Laden's relative to a federal court for criminal prosecution. Do you think that these members of Congress have reason to be concerned? And what are the issues that prompt that, in your judgment?
I believe that they have a great deal of reason to be concerned about this. chiefly the material that would be collected regarding the activities of an individual like Sulaiman Abu Ghait, who Catherine was referring to in her report, and whom these elected officials have expressed these misgivings about the decision. That material would largely be difficult to utilize in a criminal prosecution. You're talking about intelligence, which is collected in a manner which tends to be inconsistent with the requirements, if you will, for criminal prosecution. So to begin with,
not least of which, Michael, if I may interrupt, is that you have to share that information with the defendant, in which case you are almost certainly not only compromising that intelligence, but perhaps the method by which it's obtained, right?
Oh, absolutely. And so that's just another one of the many obvious issues that come into play with this decision in terms of the problems that arise from prosecuting Ghait in this manner. And, you know, on top of that, it's my concern, and I think this concern is shared by a number of other people who are engaged in relevant work, that the speedy move towards this prosecution has perhaps not accommodated sufficient interrogation, questioning, however you want to phrase that, just assessment of what Ghait can bring to bear in the way of information that is very important about the history of al-Qaeda, but more specifically, al-Qaeda's so-called shadow shura inside Iran, which bin Laden encouraged the development of soon after the 9/11 attacks.
So we've got real reason to believe that the prosecution of this guy may actually be interfered with by having brought him into civilian court. We're visiting with Michael Smith of Kronos Advisory. He is a man we have been talking with about the decision the Obama administration has made. Really, it seems out of ideological conviction as much as anything, Michael, to bring into our civilian courts terrorists like Osama bin Laden's relative, recently captured, I believe, in transiting Turkey, if I'm not mistaken. What I'm interested in most especially, Michael, is what might be the downsides if we wind up having either to share intelligence information with the defense in this case, or withhold that information to the prospects of a successful prosecution?
Well, as you were mentioning earlier, the problems that initially come into play here is the revelation of sources and methods potentially, or at least some light cast on sources and methods. In addition to that, you run into the problem, back to it, of just the way that the information is collected and the usefulness of it to a criminal prosecution. There's a great disparity in terms of how it can be applied in a military tribunal atmosphere versus a criminal prosecution as such. The decision as such has been made by the Obama administration in this case. I think that what we're going to run into here chiefly is the potential of problems with the outcome of the case. I mean, do we really possess the information that's necessary to successfully prosecute? I would argue successful prosecution would entail either life imprisonment or some other similar punishment for an individual like Ghait. This is somebody who possesses, meanwhile, a great deal of institutional knowledge. I mean, he was deeply involved in al-Qaeda's shadow shura, as it's been called, inside of Iran. And what are we foregoing there? That's the big question that comes to mind for me. What are we foregoing in terms of the opportunity to glean more information about the very important issue of Iran's relationship with al-Qaeda, and of course, ways that al-Qaeda has exploited Iran's aggression towards the United States and our allies to really maintain its very existence in the post-9/11 era.
Yeah. And Michael Smith, that's really where I want to go next with you. You have recently at Kronos produced a very important report about what you call Iran and the Global Jihad, exploring how the impossible became inevitable. Give us a quick read on what role Iran has been playing in conjunction with the folks on the Sunni side of the Sunni-Shia split, notably al-Qaeda, but not limited to them, that is giving rise to a vastly greater peril in terms of the global jihad.
Right. Well, I think you have to go back into the history of Islam. And in 1995, Bernard Lewis, who's, of course, one of the West's preeminent experts on Islamic history, just the history of the Middle East in general, in 1995, his book, The Middle East, A Brief History of the Last 2,000 Years, as it was perhaps quippishly titled, he notes that the doctrinal differences between Sunni and Shia Muslims are of minor importance and far less than those that divide the rival churches of Christendom. And when you put that out there from an expert like Bernard Lewis to preface a report on these ties between radical Shias in control of Iran and the radical Sunnis at the helms of enterprises like al-Qaeda and its affiliates, you see that a lot of analysts and subject matter experts will back off of this long-held and very popular notion that there is a fundamental problem with viewpoints that strong collaboration exists between Sunni and Shia radical elements, particularly those that target U.S. and allied interests globally today. And I think what you see happening in terms of the relationship between Iran and al-Qaeda are two different viewpoints. From al-Qaeda, I think you're looking at practicality, pragmatism, if you will, a shared enemy. In the case of Iran, you're looking at an opportunity to really shore up what is a tremendous strategic issue for the West, particularly the United States, the great Satan, if you will. In that al-Qaeda's survival and the onslaught, which it has in many respects endured quite successfully following 9/11, really creates a myriad of challenges for U.S. interests the world over.
Yeah, and that's really what I just wanted to close in. We've got just about a minute left. Michael Smith, again, is our guest. He is a counterterrorism advisor to the United States Congress and one of the founders of Kronos Advisory. He is a guy who knows his way around this subject. And when you warn that this split, this putative, insuperable division between Iran and al-Qaeda is essentially an illusion in the minds of American intelligence officers and policymakers, what Michael Smith very quickly does it say about the inability to understand that, in fact, we're dealing with a much more unified global jihadist element and effort, despite their differences, and they are serious in some cases, and they might fight to the death over them, but they nonetheless are prepared to make common cause against us to impose, well, Sharia, among other things.
Well, I think that there's been a breakdown in emphasis of human intelligence work, and with that, there's been a breakdown in a fundamental grasp of the expanse of Iran's influence on the so-called global jihad, which more than not is viewed as a Sunni-led vehicle for mobilizing attacks on U.S. and allied interests the world over.
Michael, I'm going to have to let you go at that. This is really the crux of the matter. It is a subject that we will be plumbing much more intensively in the days ahead, I'm sure, and look forward to doing so with you. Thank you very much for joining us from Kronos International. Keep up the good work. Next up, we'll have Colonel Dick Brower, United States Air Force retired, one of the leaders of the Special Operations Forces 700, on the need for an investigation, real investigation of Benghazi. Straight ahead.
To securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
It is with sound mind and body that I, James Fredericks III, after fighting with all direct family members for decades, leave my entire fortune of $32 million to the one friend I had in the end, the package delivery guy, Matt Songer.
Woohoo! Yeah! I had a feeling about this. I'm rich! Oh, this cannot be happening.
Actually, it's not happening.
What?
And it never will.
I don't get it.
There aren't even people here. That's just one of those murmuring sound effects.
Seriously?
Listen, if you want to have money in your future, don't rely on luck.
Huh.
Put $10 away each month. Cook once in a while instead of eating out.
Okay.
Pay down your high-interest credit card.
Right.
Small changes today, big bucks tomorrow.
So, no inheritance?
No. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas.
Feed the Pig!
www.aviadirect.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
And just to be clear, no inheritance, right?
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. It's been 7 months since jihadists attacked U.S. facilities in Benghazi, Libya. Ambassador Chris Stevens and three other Americans were killed, and many more badly injured. And that is pretty much all we know for sure about an incident that has, let's face it, been subjected to the most comprehensive and successful cover-up in modern political history. Now, 700 heroic special operations veterans have written an open letter to Congress calling for the creation of a new investigative committee to learn the truth. They want to know, in particular, why warriors like them weren't allowed to aid our countrymen in their hour of need. These heroes support Congressman Frank Wolf's House Resolution 36, which would establish such a select committee. If you want to join them, visit www.endthecoverup.com. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East, and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement. And how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
I'm a champion, realize Shaq's mechanism.
Hi, Shaquille O'Neal for Rap. This is not your normal PSA. Don't be stupid. Don't drink and drive. If you're going to go out and have a good time, it's fine. But designate a driver to drive home. Let's stop the madness. Don't drink and drive.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Effney.
Welcome back. It is a very great privilege to be able to speak to our next guest. His name is Colonel Dick Brower. He is a U.S. Air Force Special Operations veteran who is now leading a terrific organization called Special Operations Speaks, and it has just released today to the United States Congress a most important appeal from a large number of the Colonel's comrades. And Colonel, thank you very much for joining us and to take a few minutes to walk us through what your team has put together and why.
Sure. It's a pleasure to be back from Pensacola. We just did a broadcast on Fox News.
Breathlessly important work. Thank you for doing this both.
And basically what we did was assist Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, who came up with the idea of putting together a letter to Congress to encourage them to support H.R. 36. Which calls for an investigation of Benghazi to get to the truth. And so Special Operations Speaks, through our network of contacts and their networks of contacts, went out to the joint Special Operations community, which includes Special Forces of the U.S. Army, Ranger of the U.S. Army, SEALs, Air Commandos, those in the Air Force that have served in Special Operations units, and Marine Recon and Force Recon individuals. It's interesting to note that we have within the ranks of SOS supporters non-special ops folks who are such as fighter pilots and so on that went out through their networks. The response that we had to our call for support in terms of signatures to our letter to Congress was nothing short of astounding. It went viral, and we actually came up with 700 names of folks that encouraged us to get this letter to key members of the House of Representatives, Congressman Wolf and Gohmert and folks like that that think like we do, that want to see the truth uncovered for Benghazi. And so we put together this letter, and we call it the Soft 700, kind of like the 300 at the gates of Thermopylae. We are trying to get to the bottom of this, and that's where we are right now. Things have gone you know, quite public as to our efforts, and we thank everybody who's been involved.
For people who would like to take a look at this very important letter, they can find it at specialoperationsspeaks.com. And let's just drill down for a minute, if we could, please, Colonel Brower, on what you make of what has happened to the myriad efforts, numerous committees that were supposed to be looking into this issue of what led up to the Benghazi attack, what happened in its course, and what we were told about it afterwards, which I believe has constituted one of the most egregious cover-ups in modern political history. Why haven't these existing committees done the job, as far as we can tell?
Because I think in large part the questions that need to be asked and answered truthfully and in short order have not been asked, and that our letter to Congress has no less than 16 important questions, and we could have probably doubled that, but to keep it down to reasonable size. I have listened to all the hearings and read all the reports that are available to the public. The first fiasco was Hillary Clinton as outgoing Secretary of State, their accountability review board report, which is really kind of an oxymoron, because no one was held accountable for the absolute lack of security and the actual withdrawal of security during that phase that you mentioned leading up to the attack. And most of that turned into her hearing turned into a love fest, with most of the Democrats encouraging her to run for president in 2016. And the questions were pre-prepared, and you could tell by the responses when she said, "I'm glad you asked that question," big smile, and was ready with a stock answer. Now, when the Republicans, such as Senator Graham and particularly Kelly Ayotte from New Hampshire, asked the questions, and she insisted on yes or no answers, Hillary got quite upset. You could tell by her body language that she was mad, madder than a hatter. And in many cases, it was, "I'll get back to you on that. I knew nothing of that. We weren't aware of that." And, of course, she hasn't got back to anyone as she was outgoing.
Right. And she famously said, in response to one line of questioning from Senator Johnson, I believe, Ron Johnson, "What difference does it really make now?" And
right.
That got a lot of play. That wasn't she strong? Wasn't she robust? But let me ask you, Colonel Brower, one of the main thrusts of your effort here, the Soft 700 effort mounted by Special Operations Speaks, is that it matters an awful lot that we left people victim or at least exposed to enemy fire and doing nothing to protect them. Talk a little bit about that and the difference that it made in this episode, most especially, and perhaps in the future if corrective action is not taken.
Right. Modeled on the Marine Corps of leaving no one behind and also having your back, or having your 6 o'clock, checking your 6 o'clock, as our aviation, particularly the Air Force, would say, we sent a message, this administration, that we do not have your back. It's interesting to note that when Obama needed bin Laden taken out, he called on the SEALs, and of course they performed superbly, as they always do, and with no loss of friendly life. It's equally sad that during the Benghazi tragedy last September, that Obama did not have their back. They called for help, particularly called for fire support from aircraft that may have been overhead. We don't know yet. There's a puzzle piece we need to put together. And also laser designating a target is painting yourself as well. And Tyrone Woods was killed within minutes by three of five mortar shells fired in 18 seconds. And that was no flash mob that fired an 81 or 60 millimeter mortar. It takes an intense amount of training.
But one of the points that you made, Colonel Brower, on Fox News this morning, I believe, was the contrast between the full disclosure of all of the operational details, it seems, of how the SEALs affected that takedown of bin Laden, and essentially the most non-transparent administration in history, to coin a phrase, when it comes to exposing even to the Congress the what happened on that particular day in Benghazi, or even making available to the Congress for its oversight and hearings and testimony and so on, some of those who survived the attack.
Right. What you mentioned there about disclosing sensitive tactics, techniques, and procedures immediately after for political gain and Hollywood's benefit is one of the raison d'être, one of the reasons that SOS was started last May, almost a year ago, and that was leaking classified information that will harm our future operations and special ops, endanger not only our personnel but possibly their families. So we started on the leaks and the lies, and the and then came Libya. So if you look at our website that you mentioned, SOS, specialoperationspeaks.com, you will see a short film about 3 minutes called Leaks, Lies, Libya, and Lack of Leadership. We call it the five L's, and that film is as germane today as the day we made it. Every time we turn around, you can come up with another thing. And when Libya popped up, where everything was in wraps, kept secret, answers to questions that haven't been asked and answers that have been given that may be false. And one of the most egregious, in my opinion, was made during the Senate Armed Services Committee hearing when Senator Ayotte asked the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Martin Dempsey, and Leon Panetta, yes or no, I want to know, did President Obama call back after his initial meeting when he disappeared for the night to get his rest for his fundraiser in Vegas the following day? The answer from both of these men was no and no.
Scandalous. Dick, we have to let you go at that. It's a powerful story. We need to get the truth. We appreciate so much what you're doing at SpecialOperationsSpeaks.com to get to that truth. Thank you for the soft 700 letter. It is fantastic. And folks, if you're interested in helping with this effort to get a select committee established under HRES 36, I commend you also EndTheCoverUp.com. Dick, thank you. Keep up the good work, my friend. We'll talk with you again very soon. Next up, our duty expert on Asia, Gordon Chang, on the latest from North Korea. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medications, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, you know, couldn't hurt to call, and I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi. This is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Dennis Prager thinks there should be a simple standard to textbooks.
I'll tell you how I think a textbook should be written. This is what happened, period.
That is the role of the text.
And if nearly everybody who did something important in American history, if 78.9% of them were WASP males, then I want 78.9% of the textbook to reflect that fact.
I care about truth.
That's why I'm not on the left.
The Dennis Prager Show.
Up in the morning and out to school.
Weeknights at 10 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there.
So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff.
Like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined once again by Gordon Chang. We have the privilege of visiting with him each week to get his take on what is happening in Asia. And at the moment, there is a lot going on there, of course. He is a columnist for Forbes.com, a regular featured guest at WorldAffairsJournal.com, and also on Fox News. And we're delighted to have you with us, Gordon. We've been talking earlier in the program with Ambassador John Bolton about North Korea, and I'm always anxious to get your take on what is afoot at the moment. You, of course, have written about North Korea taking on the world. Give us your update as to what exactly it is doing at the moment. And is it, as you ask in your Forbes column, I believe it was, a prelude to reform in North Korea?
In the last 24 hours, there have been two developments. One of them is that the South Korea's unification ministry first said that it looked like North Korea was preparing for a fourth nuclear test and gave actually some details about what was going on, and then retracted its comments. I think that essentially what's going on here is that the first comments were indeed correct, and that they were just too politically incorrect, and so they had to be withdrawn. But apparently the North Koreans are going ahead with another nuclear test. It may not be in the next week or so, but nonetheless, I believe it is in the works. The second thing is that North Korea has announced that it was withdrawing its 53,000 workers from the Kaesong Industrial Complex. This is the zone which is just 6 miles north of the demilitarized zone, which separates the two Koreas. It is the only remaining cooperation project between the North and the South. This is serious because the North is essentially saying, we don't want 7% of our GDP. That's how important this zone was.
Wow, 7%.
And by closing 7%, about $2 billion in sales for a $28 billion economy. So essentially, the North Koreans are serious. This is not just words. We've gone well beyond that now. And so this is going to be something we need to watch.
Yeah, I think in talking last week with Dean Chang of the Heritage Foundation, he is also a very, very knowledgeable guy on matters in Asia, of course. He expressed concern that this was perhaps the most threatening development of all, because it suggests that North Korea really is going on to a war footing. They don't want foreigners in the border region with the South, and they are willing to accept that very severe, I didn't realize, frankly, it was that high, Gordon Chang, but nonetheless, very severe economic penalty for its actions.
If you go back a week, South Koreans were saying that what we were hearing from the North was just bluster because the Kaesong Industrial Zone was open. And then in the middle of the week, the North Koreans closed the zone to northbound traffic from the south. In other words, trucks and managers from South Korea could not get into the zone, although they were letting people in the zone leave. And that has continued on. And of course, with this most recent announcement, it means that the zone will be closed because there'll be no workers there. So this is a very important indication where the North Koreans are going. They are willing to risk most everything. Now, I think still that they do not want an all-out war. They don't even want a small war. But nonetheless, they are willing to take major steps. And I think that they are changing people's perceptions about the seriousness of this.
Yeah. Well, one of the people that seemed to have their perception changed, as we were talking about with Ambassador John Bolton in an earlier segment, Gordon, was the Secretary of Defense of the United States, Chuck Hagel, who initially, we were told, at least, decided that it was just a little too sporty at the moment to be test-firing a U.S. intercontinental ballistic missile out of Vandenberg Air Force Base. John Bolton was very, very troubled by what seems to be behavior modification on the part of the United States under the circumstances, rather than our changing the behavior of the North Koreans. Give us your sense of that.
Well, let's break this down. I think that there are certain things that the United States should continue to do, and we should not be afraid to continue them. So, for instance, our overflights of planes across South Korea, that's important because we need to reassure the South Koreans of our commitment to defend them. Because, frankly, the South Koreans are losing confidence in our ability to help them. This thing with the test flight out of Vandenberg, I don't think it's really that important. It wasn't necessary to do this at this time. And to the extent that it makes the North Koreans back down a little bit, I wouldn't be concerned that it doesn't take place at this moment. But in general, we need to make sure that the United States is resolute and that it communicates that to the South Koreans, because we want the South Koreans to exercise restraint. And if they don't trust us, they will not exercise caution.
Well, this may be one of the very few instances on which I think I disagree with you, Gordon. My own sense of it is, as you were saying earlier, that South Koreans are desperate for us to affirm the credibility of our deterrent, one aspect of which is our intercontinental ballistic missile force. And I must say, I'm concerned, especially with Chuck Hagel, a man who has openly espoused eliminating our land-based ballistic missile force as part of his embrace of denuclearization. Any excuse to prevent its modernization or the affirmation that it is still working, I suspect, is a bad bit of business. But we'll be watching it closely. Meanwhile, Gordon, let me turn to another issue on which I'm sure we find no disagreement. What do we make of the fact that the Chinese have been beefing up, we're told by Bill Gertz of the Washington Free Beacon, their military forces along the border with North Korea? Are they putting pressure on their ally by so doing, or is this simply trying to position themselves to contend with what may be coming, namely a tsunami of refugees coming out of North Korea if things go bad?
Yeah, I don't think the Chinese are that worried about a flood of refugees from North Korea going into China, largely because North Koreans, if they are going to cross a border because of problems at home, are going to go south because they want to be with other Koreans. And of course, we have demined at least three corridors through the demilitarized zone so they could just walk into South Korea. They don't want to go into China where they can be shot. They don't want to go into China because they don't like the Chinese. There have been that border between Korea and China has moved hundreds of miles in both directions over the last 500-600 years. This is not an easy relationship. The Chinese putting their forces on high alert on the Korean border has got to be of concern. It can mean a number of things. We don't know exactly what it means, but one of them is that the Chinese could be getting themselves ready to take a part of North Korea and occupy it. We know that in 1950, we thought it was inconceivable that the Chinese would cross that border and join up with the North Koreans in their fight against us. You know, that's not inconceivable, especially because the Chinese military right now is very belligerent, very anti-U.S., and is now resurgent in the Chinese political system. So we need to be concerned because we do not know what this means.
Yeah. Instability could come in numerous directions and from different quarters. Let me ask you, Gordon, finally on one bit of sort of the human drama of what's going on in China. You mentioned the ascendancy and increasing aggressiveness of the Chinese military. There's also evidence of a lot of turmoil inside the political firmament, shall we say, in China. Talk to us quickly, if you would, Gordon, about this phenomenon of decomposing bodies turning up in Chinese rivers, and the larger problem that Reggie Littlejohn has been talking about in terms of the one-child policy and its terrible toll on women and children.
Yeah. On the last one, Reggie Littlejohn has reported that a woman has died. Another woman has died in who was in the control of the Family Planning Bureau. There was a parent suicide before, which was really a murder, given all of the extenuating circumstances. This shows that China's one-child policy really is horrific beyond just any comprehension of people outside China. With regard to the dead corpses in China's rivers, in Lanzhou, which is the capital of Gansu province, there's been a phenomena of hundreds of bodies found in the river. This comes at a time when there were about 20,000 dead pig carcasses in the river that supplies Shanghai with much of its drinking water and which actually runs through the center of town. There were 1,000 dead ducks in a river in Sichuan province. There is this incredible wastage of carcasses that are just dumped into Chinese rivers. And when it comes to the question of humans, this is just gross. It's just almost inconceivable.
Gordon, we're going to have to leave it at that. You're absolutely all right. Problems that need to be explored with you in the future. We look forward to doing so next week, same time, same station, and talking to the rest of you again tomorrow. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.